Flashback Twin Cities. Good morning, I am Tom Osmond on AM 1220 KLDB. James, good morning.
Good morning, how are you doing?
I'm great, how was the week?
Oh man, it was busy, but it was good.
Anticipating the big day, right?
The big day.
Flashback Twin Cities.
Oh, every day.
So today we have a great guest. We have Bob Bruce, was the former Channel 5 KSTV sports director, news anchor, and talk show host for 12 years. He's going to be calling in live in the next segment. We're going to talk a little bit about, again, we're at carnivals and Super Bowls and all the things we do to keep sane when it's cold, even though it's a balmy 23 degrees. Is that what the weather report said?
You know what? It was actually pretty nice. I'm not sure what it is, though.
If we get 2 weeks of below zero, you know, that 20 degree just feels like a heat wave.
Yep, there it is, 27.
Oh, perfect.
I can deal with that all week.
So, James, tell me, you were talking before the show started. You went and saw Reefer Madness. Now, this is a family show, but...
No, this is not a family show.
Oh, okay. We'll change it next hour, then.
Well, it was interesting. Have you seen Reefer Madness before?
I've seen the film, yes.
The original, in 1936, I think it was.
Wow.
They definitely updated this one a little bit and added a little raunch to it. But the music was great. The crowd was just laughing hysterically. Times changed, I guess, a little bit in the storytelling.
Well, you take everything into context, and what was what was scandalous 10 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago is tame today.
My favorite part was definitely where the guy shows up outside of his girlfriend's house. She comes out in her nightie. She says, "What are you doing out in the middle of the night? It's 9.
It's 9 o'clock. You should be in bed."
Times have changed. Just
well, you know, TV, I think TV only, well, there was no TV in the 30s, but I think the radios were probably signing off at that point, and everyone was going to bed and getting ready to work on the crops next morning, especially here in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
But we talked last week a little bit about the Winter Carnival, and the Winter Carnival in 1986. But the last Ice Palace, well, the second last Ice Palace was in 1992, and the Super Bowl was here. And did you watch the big game?
You know, I saw the very tail end of the game.
Yeah,
I was kind of a loser. Went out with my friend and watched The Hobbit. Because we didn't have a team in, you know, in this.
And were you guys the only ones in the theater?
There were two other people.
Okay. Well.
And of course, the heat went out long before we got there. So it's 3 hours of sitting in the cold.
Well, the power went out of the Super Bowl, and the heat went out of the movie theater. It's pretty fitting.
It works well.
So when the Super Bowl was here, and I was looking up some facts on this, the attendance was 63,130, the second lowest only to the first Super Bowl's attendance of 61,946. The Metrodome was the smallest stadium to ever host a Super Bowl, and to date it is the most northern Super Bowl ever played. So you take Miami, you take New Orleans, you take Minneapolis. I guess it's not ideal for your Super Bowl condition.
Did they consider it a huge success back in the day with that many people?
You know, I don't recall what the reception was. I'm looking at the attendance, and I'm guessing that the NFL owners want as many tickets sold as possible.
Oh,
so that
of
might
course,
be
yeah.
one of the reasons, one of the few reasons why we haven't had a Super Bowl back here. But HBO, in their service to the community, was trying to prepare us here and trying to prepare the country on what a Super Bowl in Minneapolis might be like. This cold climate, again, you know, we talked about last week, East Coast writer in 1886 who wrote this is a Siberian wasteland that no one would ever live here. So I think that the people at HBO read that, and I think they took it to heart, even though it had been, you know, 100 years since that had been written. And they produced a little program to prepare the nation what a Super Bowl in the Minneapolis frozen Siberia would look like. Let's listen to a little bit of what HBO wanted us to know.
Super Bowl 26 visitors will find that most people here in Minnesota don't fight winter. They embrace it. Like here at Forest Lake, site of the $115,000 Golden Rainbow Ice Fishing Contest. I think I see one.
Among the contest rules, dead or frozen fish are ineligible, and prize winners must agree to a polygraph exam.
3 ounces.
A quiet pursuit? Some of these ice anglers know otherwise.
My truck fell in the lake. Well, didn't fall all the way in, but fell in, you know.
The Super Bowl's favorite weather color is usually sunny yellow. But this year, the NFL agreed to bring back the Ice Age. Here they lend a new meaning to the term icebox. But ice carvers tend to be choosy about their blocks. They also have to be cautious, because believe it or not, sometimes it's too cold to dice the ice.
Well, as it gets colder below zero...
They think it's a little condescending. They think they're making it sound like we don't know what we're doing here.
I think they... I disagree. I think they say we know what we're doing. We're just really hokey.
Well, they always do find the greatest people to interview when they want to talk about a community. So let's listen to another clip of this, and this is this includes some of our media people and some of our businesses and what they were doing to prepare people for the big game.
Yes, the cold and gray can make you crazy. That's why the Finger Hut Company here recently put its employees on a flight to find the sun. Of course, in this state, a weatherman's wisdom is precious.
Quite often, when I talk about the weather in the Twin Cities, I will use a verse. And there's one that goes like this. When the clouds are wild and the horse winds blow, and the lanes and hollows with drifts are piled, I think of violets under the snow.
I purchased every tube of chapstick in town. And I'm selling them at $100 a piece.
Weather legend Bud Kraelen giving his poetry on how to describe weather in Minnesota.
That's fantastic. We are really hokey when it comes to things
this,
like this.
Exactly. It's this aired on HBO the day before the Super Bowl back in 1992. And let's keep in mind, this was the same calendar year. Well, it was the same year that the Twins won the World Series. They'd won just a few months prior. We did have the Ice Palace. Things were going well, and I think it was only 45 below that day. No, I think
it was a warm day.
A little warmer than that. This is Flashback Twin Cities, and we are going to be talking to Bob Bruce. And I do want to invite people to tweet TC Media Now on Twitter. Also, the website is tcmedianow.com. If you like some of the audio and video audio I play today, that is from tcmedianow.com. You can also contact through tcmedianow.com or call in 651-275-1220. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we will have Bob Bruce on live from location. I do not know where he is, but he's calling in live. And we'll have some great clips and talk a little bit about Bob's career here in Minnesota when we come back on Flashback Twin Cities on AM 1220 KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, AM 1220, KLBB. And do we have a guest on the line, James?
Oh, we certainly do.
Let's bring him on.
Good morning.
Morning, Bob.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. Where are we calling you from today?
Where am I calling from?
Exactly.
I am sitting right now at my home in Scottsdale, Arizona.
I'm
I would say another 500,000 Minnesotans who are down here this time of year.
True enough. And, you know, it's
actually, last night I was up at a place in Cave Creek where they have live bull riding every Wednesday and Friday night. And I'm sitting there, and all the whole row behind me, they were all from in and around the Minneapolis area.
That's great. And it's a balmy 27 degrees we established today, so you're missing some great January or February weather here, and another winter carnival. But I'm sure that the weather in Scottsdale will more than make up for that.
Yeah, you know, we've had some cold weather this year. It was funny when I first got out here right after Christmas. They had temperatures in the 30s, and they were like setting up shelters, and they were just freaking out. It was like, I mean, in the 30s. Are you kidding? We'd be walking around in a swimsuit in Minneapolis.
No, I mean, it was we had our 10 below week, and now it's 20s, and we're going to wear wearing cargo shorts and t-shirts now outside.
I remember a time when I lived on Cedar Lake. I had my house on Cedar Lake. that literally in the middle of February once, the snow was just right there. I rode my bicycle across Cedar Lake. It was like 50 degrees. It had been like zero forever, and it popped up, and people were just doing bizarre things.
Yeah, you give up all this for a winter of golf. I don't get it, but somehow we do it.
I'm sure you miss the cabin fever.
Wow, right. We were just talking about the Super Bowl was here in 1992. It was after you had left, but we were talking a little bit about it was the northernmost Super Bowl ever played and one of the lowest attended. And I guess that the NFL owners just felt that Minneapolis was not the place to drive the most attendance to. But now we have a new stadium coming up, and you, of course, were here for the last outdoor stadium the Vikings played in that closed down, and then this dome thing came around, was going to be the stadium of the future.
And those are the worst buildings ever built. It reminds me of Three Rivers Stadium that the Steelers played in for so long, and what everybody was so emotionally attached to it. But as a stadium, it was terrible. And that's one thing I really liked as a sportscaster, was seeing new stadiums and going to new places. I actually, the only Super Bowl I ever covered was not in Minnesota or whatever, because I did the Bud Grant show and
right.
traveled with the Vikings. And, of course, they would always get close, and then they'd rip my heart out. They got the Philadelphia once, the NFC title game, Washington. They almost got there so many times. And then I'm in Pittsburgh, and I'd been a news anchor for a long time at that point. And the news director comes to me and says, hey, the Steelers are going to Super Bowl. We know you have experience. We want you to go. We lead some of the coverage. So I said, great. And then I'm thinking to myself, are they going to Miami? No. New Orleans? No. The Rose Bowl? No. They're going to Detroit.
Of course.
It was freezing cold. It was terrible.
Well, it's
but we won the game.
And you covered did you cover only Winter Olympics, or did you cover a Summer Olympics too? I know you covered the 84
no.
Olympics.
Yeah, we never covered the Summer Olympics at that point, because the reason we were so much into Winter Olympics is that there were so many Minnesotans that were involved in it.
Right, right.
So we actually, one of the only regret I have for my entire career, the only regret that was devastating to me, is that I set up, went to Lake Placid, found a place to live, it was impossible, set it up. We were one of only two organizations, and Sarajevo was the same way. At that time, local stations didn't go and cover the Olympics. They couldn't do it.
Right.
But KSTP and a station from Wisconsin that had a lot of the speed skaters, we got credentials to do the 1980 Olympics. So I'm all set, ready to go. I'm ready to go out there. And at the last minute, and this is back in the old days, my boss, Stanley Hubbard, a good friend, comes to me and says, well, you can't go because you're our main sports anchor, and it's a rating book. We can't have you off the air, so we're going to have to replace you. And so Rob Lear went instead of me.
But you did get
and
to do
course,
you did get to do the
Rob
snowmobile
Lear
race,
saw
though.
The greatest hockey game ever played.
That's right.
And I'm sitting in the studio the whole time, going, "I can't believe this. I can't. I know all these guys. I covered the team. I can't believe this." So that was the one big downer for me when it came to the Olympics. Sarajevo was a lot of fun, though. I mean, we spent like a month and a half over there. We were over there forever.
So Rob owes you big. So when I see Rob next time, I'm going to tell him, I'm going to remind him about this.
Oh, next time you see Rob, he owes me big in many ways.
Oh, well, of course, of course. But you did, but Bob, you did get to do the snowmobile race. I mean, you didn't get to see the big USSR USA game, but the snowmobile race in 80, that was almost as good, right?
Which snowmobile race?
Wasn't this the big snowmobile track you went on up to Canada?
Oh, and... that was before 1980. That was like 1978.
Okay.
And it was the great Winter Carnival snowmobile race. And I don't think they do it anymore, but in those days, they would literally go from Winnipeg, Canada, over 500 and something miles down to White Bear Lake. And there would be like 500 snow machines start that race. And we'd go like 100 miles a day, a little more than 100 miles a day. And these are guys doing like in the old days, this is back in, late 70s, these guys were doing 100 miles an hour in the ditches, road ditches, even then. So they do this race, and I said, I'm going to go up and do it, because I used to participate in a lot of stuff, and Skidoo sponsored me, gave me a brand-new machine, everything else. The only thing is, I'd never ridden a snowmobile.
Well, I mean...
So the first day, I learned very quickly that you have to get up off, in those days, didn't have quite the cushioning and stuff. I just beat myself to death the first day. And I'm going along at the very end of the day, I'm tired, and I go off a driveway, and it's like a 6-foot drop.
Oh, no.
So I hit, and I hit the windshield. I cut my nose. I still have a wrinkle over my nose to this day from that. And a guy picked me up, took me to the hospital in Canada. They put some Steri-Strips on it, should have stitched it. So I had two black eyes, reported on it for the next 3 days, and out of 500 machines, I think there may be 125 that finished, which I was one of them. So I still have. And then when we went to the Old Schmidt Brewery, and they had a trophy they gave me, which was the Ham's Bear, a big Ham's, like 12-inch bear with two Band-Aids on his nose. I still have that thing.
If you keep that, that's worth some dollars these days, because the ham stuff is pretty scarce here. That's great. I actually want to play a clip. This is Bob Bruce. He's calling live from Arizona, former KSDP sports director, news anchor, and talk show host. The Met closed in 82 and was torn down in 85. And
I was there. I was there at the last game.
Well, let's play a little audio from the day the Met was torn down.
We'll cheer for him anyway. Finally, in sports, the beginning of the end for Metropolitan Stadium in Bloomington. The old Met has stood empty since the Twins and the Vikings moved downtown 3 years ago. Demolition of the stadium was inevitable, and that process, started this afternoon. The city of Bloomington will be developing the property, but of course, for many Minnesotans, the Met will still be there at the corner of Cedar and 494 long after the stadium has been replaced by shopping areas, housing units, and office buildings. The Met had been a fixture at that intersection since the mid-1950s. The stadium first opened in 1956. Professional sports came to the Twin Cities 5 years later, and the Met was home to both the Twins and the Vikings for the better part of two decades. Ironically, one of the first sections of the stadium to be completed some 30 years ago was the first to come down this afternoon.
There it crashes.
The demolition of the Met was a sentimental occasion for some of the men who made their living there. People like Bill Brown, Bob Allison, and Hall of Famer, the great one, Harmon Killebrew.
Well, I think it's going to be a little bit of sadness to see it go, and I think, as I say, the tailgating part of it and everything that went along with it, the fans seemed to get closer and the people got closer. So I think that's a big part of the life around here that's going to be missed.
But don't worry, we have the Dome, and now we have the Mall of America.
I laugh listening to that, because I don't know who that guy is, because it sounds like a 15-year-old. I must not have reached puberty at that point. With my
that's a little rough.
But the last day of the Met, the last game, I'll never forget that, because I saw some amazing games there, including the miracle catch by Ahmad Rashad that got the against the Browns in the last second. I'll tell you a story about that in a moment. But the last game, at the very end of the game, when the Vikings lost the game, and all of a sudden you heard, like hammers hammering and just noises everywhere. And so I'm sitting in the press box, I'm looking around, and people are dismantling the stadium. I mean, this could never happen today. They're literally unbolting chairs and benches and everything else and walking out with them, and nobody's doing anything. There are people going up on the scoreboard and ripping stuff off the scoreboard. They finally had to get people to keep them from going. It sounded like a construction scene because there was people brought their tools in and basically started tearing down
That's
the stadium.
Great.
Think how much money the city saved by having the fans dismantle the stadium for them.
And now somebody's got an entire dinner table set up of these stadium seats.
No, I've seen people in their basements here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, that do have Met stadium seats in their basement. And I knew two people at least that have Met stadium seats in their home.
And I envy them.
They look like stadium seats too, but as long as the story is there and someone can verify it, they work. Bob, I want to talk a little bit about your early days on getting in broadcasting and how you came to be here. You're from Memphis, and what drove you into broadcasting?
Well, I played all sports when I was in high school, and I was a pretty good offensive tackle. And we actually my senior year, and this is the days where you had you didn't separate the class. It's like the old hockey tournament in Minnesota. Little tiny school. I was the first graduating class, and we played against one of the biggest schools in the state for the state championship. We lost the game, but I was an offensive tackle. I was the blindside tackle, actually. And I played against like three different guys that night, a defensive tackle. All of them weighed over, 260 pounds. And I think two of them got a college scholarships to the SEC. And I went to, so I started as that. Knew I wasn't going to be big enough down south to be able to go on and play college football. So early on in high school, I had a speech teacher, and I started focusing on trying to become a sportscaster. And basically, as soon as I got out of high school, got into college radio, got a job at WSAO Radio in Senatobia, Mississippi, a 5,000-watt daytimer, used to travel all over the state down there, and we couldn't broadcast live because we would sign off at sundown. and we would record the whole game on a Friday night and replay it on Saturday morning. And believe it or not, people bought advertising on that. So from there I got a tremendous break at the age of 20. This is like 1974. At the age of 20 years old, I got hired at the station that I had been a studio cameraman when I was in college. They said, do you want to come in and audition to be a weatherman? And I said, well, I want to be sports. They said, well, that's the job we have. So I went in and I got the job as a weekend weatherman, and I did that for a little while, then worked my way into being the weekend sportscaster. And then I knew the guy in front of me would be there forever, which he was. So I went from there to Dallas, Texas, got a job as an assistant there. Vern Lundquist and I became really good friends when I was down there. That's when Vern was on local TV. And then I went from Dallas to Omaha, and I was a sports director in Omaha, and Mr. Hubbard had ordered a research company. He said, go find me a sportscaster. And somehow, some way, they found out about me, and one day I got this call, and I flew up. I had lunch with Mr. Hubbard at the St. Paul Athletic Club, and I'm sitting there, and I don't realize what's going on. Didn't do an audition or anything. I just talking to him, and he said, come here with me. And he took me out in the hallway. He said, what are you making in Omaha? And I told him, and he said, if we double that, is that fair? I said, yes, sir. And he said, okay, we've got a deal. And I said, well, do I need a contract? He says, you'll get a contract, trust me. Trusted him ever since. The man was very instrumental in my life, very instrumental in getting me to where I am today, and truly owe him a lot, because that was at 25 years old to come to Minneapolis. There was nobody. I never forget the guy in the Minneapolis Tribune said, I was discovered by Frank Maggot. That's a research guy.
Right.
I was discovered by Frank Maggot in a nursery school on a hobby horse reading Mother Goose fairy tales.
That was probably John Carman probably wrote that.
Yeah, it was John Carman.
Oh, yeah. Trust me, when I had Dennis Falcon on 2 weeks ago. And
Great guy.
And I had Kirsten Lundquist on last week, and everyone has the same story when they come to Minneapolis. They come from California or Florida, in Dennis's case, and they come up here to interview, and it's always the worst possible day to come up here. It's always a blizzard. They always talk about going out to dinner or talking to the people that are going to do the hiring, and always surprised of either the opportunity that awaits them here or the equipment. And in KSUP's case, in the weather department, was very innovative and had a lot of money that they were putting into Doppler radar. And in the sports case, I'm guessing, and you came up and you obviously
time. Do you know that it's been one time in the sports department, we had 13 people. I was the sports director, so I never went. I did the schedules. I never went to the news desk for anything. We had our own live truck operator. We had our own photographers. Denny DeGrizel, one of the greatest photographers ever. I had two producers, Gary Schultenberg, who now teaches at St. Thomas, Paul Hipp, who I think is still doing some stuff. We had 13 people in there. It was, and then we had Eddie Cairo, Rob Lear, Joe Schmidt. It was amazing the things that we could accomplish. And in those days, believe it or not, I only have one Emmy, and I won that Emmy in Arizona for best live reporting. We would have had 150 Emmys during the time that I was there. But at that time, Mr. Hubbard didn't believe that we should have other people judge us. Like, who are those other people to judge us?
Mm-hmm.
They eventually changed their tune on that. But like the Sarajevo Olympics, I mean, nobody. We were the only TV station in the country that did that. I mean, it was just we did things like one time I went over. I don't know if you remember this name, Fratasek Musil. But at one point,
yes.
Lou Manny wanted to get this guy, and he was going to defect from Czechoslovakia. So we got the scoop. Louie, myself, and a photographer, went over to Europe, and we go into Italy, and we're going to go into Czechoslovakia and get this guy out.
And this is when you couldn't go to Czech Republic. This is 85, 86, right?
Yeah, is when, they were behind the Iron Curtain thing.
Right.
So we go into Yugoslavia, and of course I got previous experience at Yugoslavia now, and we drive across the whole country, which Louis lasted driving about half an hour, and I thought he's going to kill us because there are no speed limits or anything. I said, I'm driving. If I'm going to die, it'll be at my own hands. So we drive across, meet this guy in Zagreb, go to the airport. We think the Czechoslovakian police are trying to, get him, so we're not talking on the phones or anything. We go to the police. Dave Durenberger, the senator, is trying to grease the skids. We get him on a plane to London, and then I have to call Mr. Hubbard and say, Mr. Hubbard, I said, they're coming back on the Concorde. I said, if we're going to stay on this story, it was like $2,500 for one person one way back in those days.
Right, right.
So he said, well, if we have to do that to do the story, let's do it. So we hop on the Concorde, fly to New York, which is a very nice flight, by the way, get on the tarmac, and go right through customs. Durenberger, they didn't even talk. We right through, get on a Northwest flight, and we're sitting on the runway, and we take off, and we land, and we were going to be the big lead story. Huge. And that happened to be the day that the tornado hit up in, was it Hopewell, or I forget where it was, and Channel 11 there, CARE, had video from the helicopter.
In July,
pretty famous video.
July
1886. That was the same day. So the story got pushed way down in the newscast, even though we spent zillions of dollars to get it.
Well, you know what? I do have the video of that, and that actually is going to prompt me to put on tcmedianow.com. Again, this is Bob Bruce calling from Arizona, former KSDP news anchor, sports director, and talk show host, talking a little bit about the glory days of Channel 5. And Bob, keep in mind, to the people listening today, Channel 5 was number one. I mean, they weren't. They may not have won an Emmy claiming that they were the best, but they were number one in the ratings. You were record-breaking ratings.
You look at ratings today. I remember we used to have the cover of Broadcast Magazine a lot. In fact, I have a cover of Broadcast Magazine with just my hand and the number one finger. I remember Skip, our photographer, took that to put in the ad. We had over a 50 share.
Right.
When it was Dennis Falcon, Ron Majors, and Bob Bruce. There were three guys with a 50 share. Within 2 months of being in town, I was recognized everywhere. I can still come back to the cities, which I do a lot because my brother-in-law lives there and sister-in-law. I've got very dear friends, so I go to Minneapolis a lot. So I get recognized all the time, and I'll never forget my son and I were at Galleons at the time, which is now owned by Dick's, which is based in my hometown, Pittsburgh, where I live 6 months out of the year. So anyway, we're sitting in the line, and all of a sudden a guy behind me goes, "Hey, Brucey, Brucey." And I turn around, and it's a young guy that I knew when he was, nobody knew who he was. Paul Hipp came to me one day and said, "This guy, this year, is going to go up to the Twins and is going to be an unbelievable guy." Got to know him when nobody, when he wasn't famous and everything else, was very dear, really neat guy. And I turned around, and it was kind of sad because it was Kirby Puckett, and he was kind of looking from one side.
Oh,
and
wow.
You know, Kirby was, but, I mean, he said, my son's sitting there going, "I can't believe this." He says, "Hey, Brucey, what are you doing?"
That's great. No, and by the way, and when you know this from being here for 12-plus years, we don't just let you leave. You know, you're part of the family once you're here, and we recognize you, and we want to you know, bring you into our homes. And chances are we saw you every night more than we saw some of our family members, you know, some nights. So it's not...
Yeah, I used to say that in speeches, actually. I used to say that, you know, if somebody comes up in the mall, you got to talk to them. There are only two markets I've ever been in where it was like that, where you're always, and Minnesota is very much like that. Pittsburgh is very much like that. When I left Phoenix, because I anchored here for 4 years as the main nighttime anchor, and then they switched from CBS to Fox, and I didn't want to be on Fox at that time. I think they had one program, The Simpsons.
That's right.
So I went to work for Cox Broadcasting in Pittsburgh, and I did all my research, and I said, what is the biggest town like Pittsburgh that I can go to? Like Minneapolis, and it was Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is very, very similar to Minneapolis, say, you know, mid-'80s or whatever, size-wise and everything else. Very, you know, tremendous hockey town, unbelievable football town, very much like when I lived back in the Twin Cities. In fact, my son, the first thing we did was get season tickets for the Pittsburgh Penguins because we're, you know, we're big hockey fans. So there's a lot of connections. To people say, well, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that's the East Coast. It's, no. That's, I live like maybe 10 miles from the Ohio state line.
Right.
And if you go to the middle of the state, everything after the middle of the state, we consider it Philadelphia territory, and we don't like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. We hate the Flyers. We don't like the Eagles. We consider that part of maybe New Jersey.
Well, that's why you never confuse a Vikings fan for a Packers fan. See, that's the same kind of thing. You never want to assume Minnesota, Wisconsin, or Iowa are the same place.
Well, I tell you a funny story. Last night, I was sitting there talking to this guy from Minnesota, and I said, you know, every time I go to a hockey game at the Pens, I wear my old original North Star jersey I got when we played a celebrity hockey game once against the Hollywood All-Stars. It's got Bruce on the back and number 5 for Channel 5. And you can't believe how many people laugh because they go, "Don't you know we beat you guys for the Stanley Cup? Do you remember that?"
Let's listen to a clip, actually. This is a promo, and you brought up Kirby Puckett, but this is a promo with Bob Bruce and Kirby Puckett.
What a great day for a ball game here at the Dome.
In Minnesota, we work hard and we play hard.
Together, every day, together, we can show you.
goodness, somebody call a doctor.
Kirby, this bat's got more life in it. I'd use this one.
You know, between that and the football game are two of the most popular videos on the website. The weird team.
You know, that was an unbelievable promotion. I mean, that, and I remember, did you ever find that the day we filmed the sledding, we're the team over at Town and Country
yes,
Club?
Yes, it is up, and I think you gave a thumbs up on Facebook on it. It is up.
It is? I forgot if you had that up there. I mean, what you've done is amazing. I literally carried around with me videotapes from, I was in broadcasting for 37 years. And I had them in my basement, and you called me one day and said, you know, if you send them to me, I'll dub them and everything and send you copies back, and I'm going to put on the website. And I go, can I trust this guy? I don't know this guy from Adam. This stuff is my whole life that I want to preserve for my grandchildren and everything. And so I shipped them to you, and then what you've done as far as saving all these different, you know, the other day you posted my first newscast ever. I don't have that. The first news, when I switched from sports to news, the first newscast, you posted that the other day. I'd forgotten about that.
Well, again, the guest is Bob Bruce today, calling from Arizona. Bob was on KSTP for 12 years as a sports director, news anchor, and talk show host. And Bob, you've been very generous with the tapes, and I appreciate the endorsement because I still am convinced there's more tapes of you out there that other people have in their boxes that if they like what we do on tcmedianow.com, they'll pass them my way because a lot of them go in the dumpster. A lot of them are in the garage or the basement.
I think I still got to go through mine again because I think I may still have my basement's a mess now. But I got my daughters living with us. I got a new grandbaby, so they moved in to save some money and they're going to buy a house in May. And so all their furniture's in my basement, so I can't get to anything. But I probably have some more stuff down there. And you really tremendous gratitude to you because one of the greatest. Moments I ever had in sports is when I had a chance to do a golf tip with Jack Nicklaus, and that's on YouTube. And you know, having that there when I rode a horse in a rodeo in Omaha and a few of those things, you know, that'll be there forever. So my children now, they love watching it. That first newscast, they were just laughing because I look like my son, who's now 30.
No, that's great. In fact, when we come back from the break here, we'll talk a little bit about that transition from sports to news, and then Twin Cities Live. I have some great clips from both those. So we'll take a break,
God.
And we'll be back on KLEB 1220.
Our Stars take an 11-game unbeaten streak. Well, the Twins have finally cracked the win column in their sixth spring training try at Cocoa, Florida today. Gary Ward hit a home run as the Twins beat the Houston Astros 3-2. Home runs seem to be a commodity the Twins might have this season. At least one guy who's trying to make the team traffics in them. In his first of a series report from spring training, here's Bob Bruce.
All week long in our spring training reports from Florida, we'll be telling you about the players that'll comprise the Twins' youngest team ever. Now, some of those players I'm sure you've heard of, like Ken Herbick and Gary Gaetti, but there are more, including Randy Johnson, who just may turn out to be the big surprise of this year's spring training. Johnson's power has already caught the eye of the Twins' decision-makers. In yesterday's 9-6 loss to Toronto, he had four RBIs and two of his three hits wound up on the far side of the right field fence. While one good game certainly won't guarantee Randy a job with the Twins, a number of spots are open, and a left-handed hitter with power...
Think of all those doldrum years of the Twins in the 80s you covered, and then you leave sports and they win the World Series.
Well, that's probably my second regret. I said I only had one. You just reminded me of another one. Because they came to me, the first year that the Twins were going to make it to the World Series. And right before they won the pennant, to go to the World Series, I finally had convinced Mr. Hubbard because he just didn't want me out of sports. He said, I love you as a sports guy. I don't want you to do news. And I knew the future for me was news. When ESPN came on the air, I knew that local news would begin to shrink, local sports. Which it did. And so he came to me and says, well, we're going to give you the job at Twin Cities Live and you can do the morning news and take over this failing talk show. And so I had to make that choice about 2 weeks before they won the pennant. Now, the Twins got me great seats on the third base line, so I saw every game and everything, but I wasn't in the locker room. So I missed out on that, but it worked out to the good because news, I've done some been able to do some pretty amazing thing in news over the years that I would have never gotten to do as far as sports.
And one thing, just real quick on sports, and we'll kind of move off from sports and news. You created Sports Reel here at Channel 5, which is a very popular segment, and that was kind of...
Are you still doing that?
Well, no, but I did find a clip that Joe Schmidt had done right as you had transitioned, and let's listen to that.
The bad news this morning. Here's some good news. Oh, yeah, yes, sir. That means only one thing. Sports Reel is now a regular on Thursday mornings here Channel 5.
Wonderful.
Now to the big news of the week. Right. Our second inductee into our infamous, or infamous if you prefer, Sports Reel Hall of Fame. A special inductee this time.
No.
Sports Reel's founding father, Mr. Robert Bruce. Bob has left Sports Reel and is now all tangled up. Being a talk show host, but Bob is still keeping his foot in sports.
You're being wrestled by Vern Gagne's daughter there, I think.
Oh, I know, I remember them.
Kansas City, here I come.
Hopefully, the Royals' future in the pennant race is about as good as Bob's in the music business.
Well, that's a general consensus of the people in the neighborhood.
I think that's a general consensus.
Something was wrong with that audio.
Yeah, Sports Reel. That was your inductee to the Sports Reel Hall of Fame.
That was a great little feature that we did, and it was repeated by a lot of other people around the country. But some of the things that we did, literally, nobody had ever done. We had such an incredible budget and things. Many, many times, I would be at the North Star game, and I'd do this anchor the sports cast from there. And then one time we threw it over to like a Minnesota Gopher hockey game, and then over to another reporter live at a Gopher basketball game, and then back to me. In those days, that was incredibly hard to do. Very innovative on the part of KSTP to do that. Nobody else is doing it. I'll never forget. We're coming to a Stanley Cup game. And Mark Rosen came up to me and says, "Geez, how did you do those highlights from the Islander Arena? How did you do that and match them up and everything?" Because we had a system where I knew to read a certain number of lines, and then in my ear, Paul, the producer, would say, "Change." And so I'd know the next highlight was on, and we could match it where you would swear I had a monitor to look at. But in those days, we're doing C-band satellites. You had no monitor. I couldn't see what was going on. But we had it to where you would swear that I was looking at a TV monitor doing the highlights.
No, I agree. And I'm looking at – we have hours of this video on tcmedianow.com, and between you and Rob Leader and other people at Channel 5 doing these sports casts from the sidelines, which they don't do too much these days. You're reading off scores.
They don't have the people.
No, not at all. And you're reading off scores. You're reading off plays, from the sidelines. And as you attest to, no monitor to go by, and it's matching up pretty well. I mean, at least for us here, we're looking at it 30 years later, and it looks pretty good.
Well, there were fun times because it was not Mr. Hubbard just kind of had the feeling that if we could come up with an idea and it sounded good, we'd try it. I mean, there was the money was no object in those days.
So let's talk about the transition from sports to news. You've done sports, you've done evening sports, and now you become a talk show host and you become a news anchor in the morning. So a very different change, not only in job duty, but also in lifestyle, I'm guessing.
It was terrible. I mean, getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning is not fun. I've done it twice in my career. It was just a necessary evil. Somebody asked me, how can you get up at 3 o'clock in the morning? And I said, I can tell you one word: a mortgage.
All right, doing the work.
You got to do the job, but it was fun. And on Twin Cities Live, which those kind of programs really don't exist anymore on a local level. At that time, it did. We were on before Oprah came on,
mm-hmm.
So I think we went on 1 year before her. But on that show, I met everyone from President Jimmy Carter, Shirley MacLaine. I could go through almost every kind of famous person. In those days, they had to go to the top 15 markets to sell their books. They couldn't sit in Hollywood and do a satellite interview. So if somebody wrote a big book, Suzanne Summers, anybody, Shirley Temple. If Shirley Temple was on that, I met Shirley Temple.
Yeah, I'm in the process of putting a lot of these on the website, actually, and there's a lot of your generosity. I have a lot of these. I was looking – one of the best ones, and people that are the Generation X from myself and James and others, is you had a guest on, and I'm going to play the intro to this and see if you can remember this moment. And I wish it's not Jimmy Carter, it's not Shirley MacLaine. This is a little bit more humorous nature, but let's listen to this.
Mountain climb 5 at the fair. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Twin Cities Live, live from the Minnesota State Fair. I'm Bob Bruce. We've got a great crowd gathered here today on the fairgrounds, and we've got a very interesting subject. The little fellow that I've got in my hand here, most of you would recognize him as E.T. Today, we have really a couple of subjects, but the same theme. One is, does a little fellow like this have satanic effects on your child? Are there other toys in your children's toy box that may have satanic effects? And that old ever-popular theme of rock and roll music, is it damaging the brains of the young people of America? Now, I have a mother right here. And could you stand up, please, ma'am? And Masters of the Universe, Smurfs, E.T., do you have those kind of toys?
Masters of the Universe, yeah.
Of course.
Are you afraid that Masters of the Universe is going to have bad effects on your children?
I don't know. I'm not crazy about it.
Then why did you buy it?
I have to admit fully now to the audience that I had a lot of Masters of the Universe, and if there's maybe that can explain a lot of my challenges in life.
Every
but,
single one.
But no, that is actually one of the most popular videos of Twin Cities Live because the
Masters,
it is Masters of the Universe, and the music that your guests claim to have some satanic effects are Bananarama. So if you look at all the 80s music that they could have picked, they picked Bananarama. So that's how it goes. But that was a great show, and I was looking at some video, Jimmy Carter, Captain and Tennille, Suzanne Somers, Shelley Long when she left Cheers, which was kind of a controversial time.
Well, you know what's funny is Shelley Long came on the show, and we found someone who had babysat Shelley Long.
That's right.
And she was in the audience, and she started to cry, and I took my pocket handkerchief out of my coat and gave it to her. And then we actually had a chance, my wife and I, we met some people from Cheers. We had a chance to go out and see the Cheers set and everything one time, and it was pretty amazing. She was very, very nice. One of the funniest shows we ever did, I think I talked for 30 seconds the whole show, was Tim Conway. Tim Conway came on. I said, "Here's Tim Conway," and he just started, and he went like an hour and just never stopped, and everybody was just crying. They were laughing so hard.
It's great, and so I have to ask the tough question of the interview today. You name recognition, sports. You have a talk show. You're doing the news. What brought you to leave Minnesota after 12 years?
Well, what happened is at that particular time, there was no way for me to go to the nighttime news. I said I need to be a main news anchor. That's part of what I want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. I could have stayed and done the morning forever, and mm-hmm. and it was the worst time. We drove out of town. And we're in Burnsville looking back on the Emerald City, which is Minneapolis. And my whole family, my daughter, my son, my wife, are all crying in the car because we're moving to Oklahoma City. Boy, there's a cultural change. Oklahoma City to be the 6 and 10 o'clock news anchor, of which I was there 2 years. As soon as I got there, I said, I got to move on. And I was there for 2 years and then got a tremendous job in Phoenix. And then kind of worked my way. When we went to Pittsburgh, it's really where I started my life now. And that is, I was very unhappy moving around. I like Pittsburgh, but basically had a mentor that got me into the financial business. And so I own my own investment consulting business now. My son, Scott, works with me. My son-in-law, Alan, works with me. And believe it or not, a woman I anchored with on the air in Pittsburgh for like 10 years, she came into the business and is a certified financial planner. So we have a tremendous firm, work with great people all over the country. I've got clients every state I've ever lived in. So that's how I'm able now to do the lifestyle that I'm doing now is the financial business. So it was a progression. I never knew all the lessons I learned in broadcasting would be so valuable later on. I like to tell people when I sit down with them, I've talked to, you cannot think of a human being on this earth, the type of human being that I haven't talked to. And that goes from the bad of the bad to the best of the best. From presidents to kings to you name it, over the years, I've either met them, talked to them, interviewed them. I've interviewed every president since Ford, except for Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. And I interviewed George H.W. Bush 2 weeks before he lost the election on Air Force One.
Air Force One, that's right.
I mean, those are the kind of things that, I was very, very fortunate for, a kid coming out of Memphis. And I literally, 2 years ago, went back to WSAO radio. It looks the same as it did 40 years ago. And I could still very well be there as a disc jockey. I was making $63 a week and 15% of any advertising I could sell. But I just, kept moving forward. And the big break for me was Minneapolis. The big part of, my children were born there. I met my wife there. If I'd never gone to Minneapolis, I'd have never met her. We've been married for 33 years now. So Minneapolis is home, and being in Scottsdale, it's funny because the Minnesota license plates are everywhere here.
Well, and I talked to Dennis Felkin, again, your buddy, and he says he's in Miami, and sure enough, Minnesota plates are in Florida. So when you escape us, and not escape, but when you move on and you get a better role.
I never move on because I'm going to be in Minneapolis. I'm going to be with my friends in the St. Croix River March 22nd because one of my friends, Kari, who's Mr. Hubbard's oldest daughter, her son, Robbie, my kids kind of grew up with her kids, and he had his first child, so I'm almost like a de facto grandfather to his child as well. So I got to come back and see my family members there that, you know, it's growing. So we have very, very tight friends there, and I just hope the weather's good when I come in on March 22nd. So I assume you'll be at the airport with a welcome sign.
I'll be there with the limo hat on and the welcome sign. I might have to come back to the station and do the show real quick. But we have a few minutes left, and I want to first of all, what's your website, Bob? So in case people want to see what you're doing, they can check it out.
Oh, it's real simple. It's www.iwcnow.com. In other words, Integrity Wealth Consulting Now, iwcnow.com. If you just search Bob Bruce on Google, my daughter-in-law told me last night, she was talking to some friends, oh, yeah, my father-in-law, he used to be famous. He used to be on TV. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, I can prove it to you. Google his name.
Well, go to YouTube or tcmedianow.com. I appreciate the hits. I want to play a promo from the early days, and I brought these for the interview. Let's listen to this little commercial from 1976.
Hi, I'm Bob Bruce, and I'm practicing for my next first-hand report from the world of sports. This time, I've challenged the greatest hustler of them all, Bobby Riggs. How's this one, Bobby? Hey, Bob, that's not a bad shot. Hey, here's a shot I use against Margaret Court, the Riggs Law. Yeah, but how about some of those shots you use against Billie Jean? Oh, gosh, you sure know how to hurt a guy, don't you?
I couldn't do the show without playing that today.
Amazing. I mean, I hope the audience, some people remember who Bobby Riggs was. He was a kind of a mid-level professional tennis player who back in the 70s decided to make a name for himself as a hustler and playing big-name tennis stars like Margaret Court and Billie Jean King. We beat Margaret Court. Nobody could believe he beat it. And he'd travel around with Sugar Daddy, like the candy bar, and he had these young blondes with him, and he's an old guy. So when I played him once, he had 25 chairs on his side of the court, and he had waiters on, duck waiters, and he still beat me.
You know, time's gone by, right? Well, that is also online, and I think your rodeo appearance and your rookie, one of the great series you did from the days in Memphis, I believe.
Well, I played four plays in the World Football League with Larry Zonka, Jim Kick, and Paul Warfield. John Hewitt, the Heisman Trophy guy from Notre Dame, was our quarterback. And it lasted like a year or so, and I played in front of 65,000 people quarterback, and then it folded. And then the people like Danny White, the backup quarterback, went on to play for Dallas. John McVay went on to coach at the New York Giants and then become the general manager of the San Francisco 49ers when they won all the Super Bowls. So a lot of connections along there, which, by the way, I was very happy the 49ers lost because we don't like Baltimore. That's our big evil, you know, if you're a Steeler fan. But we didn't want San Francisco to win because if anybody talks about football, I just go, how many Super Bowls do you have?
That's right.
Because we have the most.
That is right. Well, you know, Minnesota, well, when we get that new stadium, I'm sure we're going to win a few of them, right? Okay. All right.
That'll be great. I can't wait to see that. I'll tell you, that college stadium, the Gopher Stadium, is the most beautiful college stadium I've ever seen anywhere.
Target Field and the TCF Stadium are both great stadiums, and when we get the Viking Stadium, we're going to be a first-class sports town. And, Bob, we hope you're going to come out and hang out with us in studio sometime when you're in town.
Oh, no, you know, next time I get out there in the summertime or whatever, I'll give you a buzz and come there. In fact, every time I go to a hockey game, I think of Minnesota because our arena, our brand-new arena, is basically a carbon copy of the XL Energy Center there, except it's a little nicer because it's newer, but it's just like deja vu.
Bob, thanks so much for being on today. We'll be in touch very soon.
Well, thank you so much, and hello to all my friends and relatives back in Minnesota. We'll see you soon.
This was Flashback Twin Cities. I am Tom Osmond. The website is tcmedianow.com. This is AM 1220 KLBB.